Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
And he looks at the midfield and says, watch me go. And go he does. Eamon Coughlan on his way to a major title for the first time in his life. Brilliant, Eamon. The champion of the world.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, it's a little bit damp and dreary out there this morning, but we'll have plenty for the next 2 hours to keep you entertained in all things sport. In NFL, we'll be catching up with Stephen O'Brien from UKPackers.co.uk to recap on last week's news and to look ahead to this weekend's fixtures in the NFL. And he'll also be giving us his ACCA for Week 7. In racing, Dave Weldon will be here to preview this weekend's showcase meeting at Cheltenham Racecourse, and he'll also give us his lucky 15 for the week. And in snooker, Ken is going to join us on the line talking to us about Judd Trump's triumph in the 2020 English Open and also preview Stage 2 of the Snooker Championship League, which takes place this Monday. Things are kicking back to reality a bit for the Irish team as they get back involved in the Six Nations this weekend. And we'll have Will Slattery talking to us about the resumption of that 2020 Six Nations and to preview Ireland's clash with Italy this afternoon in the Aviva Stadium, one I'm really looking forward to. In GAA, well, it's been a busy week, lots of talk around the GAA, but matches are going ahead. And we'll be talking to Declan Drake as he recaps on Dublin's win against Meath in the Allianz Football Division 1 matchup last weekend. And he'll also preview this weekend's Senior Hurling Championship clash between Dublin and Laois and this evening at Croke Park, and the Allianz Football League fixture between Dublin and Galway at Pearse Stadium tomorrow afternoon. Football, there was plenty of action during the week as well, loads going on, and Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call will be talking to us about Dundalk's midweek loss, the disappointment against the Norwegian side Molde in the Europa League stages, and the loss yesterday for the women's team in the Ukraine against Ukraine in the 2022 Euro qualifiers, which means it'll be very difficult for them to qualify, but there is still a chance. And we'll also have the very latest from the League of Ireland and the Premier League. And this week's major moment in sport looks back at the 2009 Grand Slam, the week that's in it. When we get back to the 2020 Six Nations, it's only fitting that we look back at the last time we picked up a Grand Slam, and that was the first one we did pick up in over 61 years, so well worth looking back on. As usual, we want to hear with from you even, and your thoughts and your memories from that 2009 Grand Slam would be great to hear from you. Text us on 087 11 55 777, and of course don't forget we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Delighted to say I'm joined in studio by our own Blaine O'Hara. Morning Blaine, how are you?
Good morning Reg, how are you getting on?
Not too bad, it's been a strange week for everybody, I think.
Yeah.
Trying to come to terms with all things locked down again. Doesn't seem as daunting as the last time, even though it's still very, very tough and a lot of things are closed down. But that being said, this time around, we still have sport to talk about, rightly or wrongly, as people are saying. But there are certainly plenty to review this week and to look forward to over the weekend, and maybe take our minds off everything that's going on in the world at the moment.
Absolutely.
What's happening headlines wise this morning?
I think we have to start off, unfortunately, with some bad news, and it's not good to start off with some bad news, but we'll get it out of the way. So yeah, as you said, Reg, Ireland, unfortunately, the women's Irish team lost yesterday in their Euro 2022 qualifiers against Ukraine. And as you said, it was it's going to be very tough now on seeing how we're going to qualify. Obviously, we have to hope for some results to go our way with Ukraine's last two games against Montenegro and Greece. But as you can see, they're playing Montenegro, who are at the bottom of the table, and then who've gotten 0 points from all of their games. And then, as well, Greece, they're second to bottom. So it's looking like Ukraine definitely could win both of their games. And then the thing is, Ireland's playing Germany, who haven't even lost
on the 1st of December. That's going to be a pretty tough one, all right. But look, I mean, it was a good performance yesterday. They were unfortunate. Yeah. Things didn't quite go their way. Certainly gave everything they had. It was disappointing, of course. It was an own goal that cost them that. Yeah. defeat yesterday. But yeah, look, I mean, it was always going to be a challenge, but I think they knew going into the game it was going to be a tough one. But let's just see. You never know. Stranger things have happened. The results might go their way.
That's right. And hopefully with our own luck yesterday, we can get some luck for the next few games.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It was disappointing as well for Dundalk during the week. Yeah, I mean, they played well and it looked so good, and getting the goal and all of that, you kind of were feeling, wow, is this going to be one of those nights that, you know, we'll remember for a long, long time to come. Yeah. I mean, Mulder were probably a little bit under par, if the truth be told, in the first half. But in the second half, I saw the likes of Alan Cawley tweeting about it. They really did step things up in the second half and show the quality that they've got. And I think it was just a little bit too much for Dundalk in the end. Nonetheless, superb performance.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's... yeah, it's good to see an Irish team, you know, playing so well in a European competition. Now, I've seen that the Dundalk boss has said that it's going to be quite tough for the next few games, because they're going to be playing Arsenal. They will, in their next game in the Europa League, only I think next week. But they've got a very tough schedule. It's very compact. So he's been saying that we need to, you know, forget about the match against Malta and just go for it in the League of Ireland, and then go for it against Arsenal, and hopefully they can get a positive result against Arsenal.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's got to be tough. Arsenal did great to come back from there. They were losing 1-0 to Rapid Vienna away from home, so it was a great comeback from them, and a positive for you and I, being Arsenal supporters. That was a good result. So yeah, it'll be hard for Dundalk against Arsenal, but I'm actually really interested in that, just because, you know, of my love of Arsenal, but also because it's Dundalk and it's an Irish team playing against them. So it'll be a very interesting match. Great for Leeds last night, beating
Absolutely.
Villa
3-0. Couldn't They're believe
really,
that.
I mean, I remember saying it at the beginning of the Premier League, way back when we were talking about it coming back, and we were all excited about it coming back and everything else, and being asked who the dark horses were, we all had to say our dark horse, and I am proud to say that I said Leeds. But yeah, I thought... I just think they've gone great. They're third now on the table.
They are indeed, yeah. They're third, just behind Aston Villa, who they bet yesterday, and Everton. So it's absolutely amazing. It is amazing to see.
And this no crowds thing is great for the lower division teams. That's the reality
and
of it.
You know what the funny thing as well? They're saying, Reg, that, you know, it might be a disadvantage that they have no one at Elland Road. But look at it. They're doing brilliant.
Yeah, I'm telling you. It's all about just proving now that the big teams depend on the background noise and the crowds and everything else. We're going to have top teams like Liverpool and Arsenal and United piping in crowd noise in the background in the stadium. It's the only thing for it, because it's definitely it's having an effect. There's no question about it.
Absolutely.
And I heard, actually, I did hear a thing during the week. Someone was talking about that very point and making that point, that it is actually easier in all likelihood for the lower down teams, because it's not as intimidating, you know, and it's just they go out and they play football and everybody's brought back to a level par, whereas when there's a huge crowd there and the pressure is on and everybody's watching, that's when the really elite players step up and they can deal with that better than the lower division players. And I don't know whether that's true or not, whether it's all rubbish, but might be something in it when you look at the top of the table.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm delighted as well for Leeds, because hopefully if they can stay up this season, which they look like they will anyway, I know it's only been a few games, but I'd be delighted for Leeds fans, because if they can get crowds back in for next season, it'll just be a delight for them to go back and support Leeds in the Premier League with a full Elland Road. You know what I mean?
That'd be amazing. Well, they're doing so well now. It's like, I mean, there was a lot of people wondering about how they'd get on moving back up. They've already proven themselves.
Hit the ground running.
I can't see anything going wrong at this point. Anyway, we'll be talking to Alan Cawley later on about all of the football, and he'll give us his thoughts on that. Back to rugby this week. I mentioned earlier in the intro that the Six Nations resumes this weekend after 36 weeks was the last time Ireland were out in the campaign. Today they're hosting Italy in the Aviva Stadium in the penultimate game of the competition. Has made some changes, Andy Farrell, and there's some interesting debut starts for the likes of Will Connors and Hugo Keenan, and we've got the likes of Jameson Gibson-Park and Ed Byrne on the bench as well as replacements. So it's looking like it's going to be a cracking match in the Aviva.
Absolutely, yeah, and looking forward to it anyway, Reggie.
Yeah, it should be a good one. And like like I said, it's great to see rugby back in one shape or form, and it kind of builds things up nicely. Ireland will be expected to get that result, but it builds things up nicely for next week's game against France, which would be a real juicy encounter. I'm looking forward to that one. And other good news in rugby as well. Great to see last night Dan Levy making his return after 19 months out with an unbelievably bad injury. And you know, he's done extremely well to get back. Even though, like, 19 months is a long time, it was potentially a career-ending injury that he had. And to come back and get out and come off the bench last night and take part in what was pretty much a training run out for Leinster last night as they demolished Zebre in the Pro 14, 63-8. But we'll be talking to Will Slattery as well just after 10 o'clock to get his thoughts on the game last night, the game today. But also, I really want to get into this with him about the announcement from Philip Brown during the week that the IRFU is reporting massive, massive deficits in their income. And it's really, really worrying. €35.7 million deficit in its report for the 2019-2020 season, and it's pretty ominous. And if they don't, as Philip Brown said it, if things don't drastically change and cut their budget the next 12 months, rugby in this island as a professional sport is in serious jeopardy. So I want to get into that with Will a little bit after 10 o'clock. Well worth listening to.
Absolutely. We've got a good bit going on in Ga, we do, this week, Reg. Mm-hmm. So Kerry can be crowned Division 1 football champions this afternoon if they beat Donegal in Tralee, so that'll be a tasty one. And then we've got some great other games we do. Dublin are playing against Galway, they are, tomorrow, down in Galway. So there's going to be some very, very interesting matchups this weekend.
Okay, and we're going to talk to Declan Drake as well about all of that. Obviously, the Dubs getting victory last weekend over Meath, and this weekend the hurling throws in, and that gets underway with Dublin taking on Laois. So there's going to be plenty of GAA action. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that as well. Keep letting us know your thoughts on the GAA and on 087 11 55 777 and those games going ahead. What's your thoughts on Ara? I'll start again. What your thoughts on it are, I know it's dividing opinion right across the board for people, right or wrong. They don't hold back on what their opinions are on whether it should be going ahead or not. But it'd be good to hear from you, our listeners, as well, to get your thoughts on it and see where you lie on it. In cycling as well, Dan Martin goes into the fifth stage of the Vuelta España, just 5 seconds off the lead of Primoz Roglic. Sam Bennett claimed yesterday's fourth stage, so going well there too, Sam Bennett. Okay, it's time to turn our attention now to the NFL. Delighted to be joined on the line by Stephen O'Brien of UKPackers.co.uk. Morning, Stephen.
How are you, Reg? Who are you?
I'm doing well, actually. Bit miserable looking outside the window, but hopefully it'll brighten up a bit later on. And there's plenty to look at in sport over the weekend, so that'll keep us going. Bit disappointed last week, though. Ake looked like a bit of a dead cert, everything going okay. Yeah. And then out of nowhere, the Packers get spanked by the Bucs in the worst performance of the season. What is going on?
Yeah, so they go spanked, they're right, get the paddle out. Yeah, it's bad. I always enjoy coming on the radio, Reg, when the Packers are in the Ake and they also get waxed by the other team. It's always fun.
But it's your own team that are destroying this great run you've been having on the Ake. That's what kills me.
Yeah, we were undefeated, that's the thing. I mean, why would I not go for them, you know? And the thing is, dare I say that was the lock of that week? But look, I thought I'd got one over on the bookies because we got a three-timer instead of four, which is always good to say as an Irishman. And then I threw in that danger bet where I was like, the Bills could potentially put it to the Chiefs, and they did. Now, I did say that the Chiefs were likely to win that game. If you want, I think we had a 15-1 shot on that one, but there was a massive caveat. But yeah, I mean, the other games came out exactly as we wanted them. But the Packers got absolutely pasted. And that was really unforeseen, Reg, to be honest, because, again, from covering the Packers every single day in depth on the podcast and the website and everything else, that was sort of set up for the Packers to win. They were undefeated. The Bucs were seemingly faltering. They were without some key pieces. We saw some trouble earlier in the season, where Tom Brady and Bruce Arians were kind of going against each other in the media, of all places. So that was set up for the Packers to play well. The problem was the Bucs shut down the Packers' run game, which made us one-dimensional. But then also Aaron Rodgers just looked off. Now, he said they needed a kick in the backside, which they certainly got because they lost by 28 points. which is a loss. They didn't score after the first quarter, and the Bucks just ran away with the game. But, like, I mean, look, we're 2020, right? And it's weird enough as it is with COVID and everything else, but we're still talking about Tom Brady, and he's an old fella. And also, Rob Gronkowski has his breakout game. Now, here's a guy who retired and went and did some wrestling and then comes back into the league, and we even gave up points to him. So, look, it was just a bit of a brain fart, I think, on the day, and I'm hoping the Packers bounce back. But they've got a tough game again this week, Reg, against the Texans. They've only won one game, and we spoke about them the last couple of weeks, firing their coach and being in trouble and all this, but they're a very good team. They're putting it up to teams as well, so I won't be putting the Packers in the ACCA this week.
Okay, we'll leave them out of it this week. But there's trouble in Dallas as well, as the speakers are, the players even, are speaking out against new head coach Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, early days, isn't it? Jesus, I mean, this is a guy who's the new head coach in Dallas. His first year. And again, I know him well because he came from Green Bay, and it didn't end very well in Green Bay. Now, Green Bay, again, no rich owner, so we tend to, you know, be easy with how we make decisions. But they fired him before the season was over, and that shocked everybody at the time. But one of the things that was leveled against Mike McCarthy is that the communication wasn't great, that his in-game adjustments weren't great, so the Packers could be getting spanked again, right? And it'd be because, you know, they're getting ran all over. And McCarthy was never that good at making in-game adjustments to get away from his game plan. It seemed that his game plan was his game plan, and he'd keep just knocking his head against the wall. Other things he'd do was is a run game would be great, and then all of a sudden he would just follow his game plan and turn to the pass and not pound the ball, which was annoyed people at the time because they're like, why isn't he just playing for what's ahead of him? Now, that's coming out in Dallas again, but unfortunately for him, the players are after releasing anonymously, right? So talk about, you know, doing that to your head coach. Now, they're 2-4, so they're losing games. Add to that, we talked about Dak Prescott, who was playing really well at quarterback, and then he got that leg break, and now he's out. So, of course, they're not going to do great. But these players now in Dallas, they're coming out, speaking out against them. They're not putting their name to the criticism. They're releasing it to Jane Slater, who's an NFL Network reporter. So she's coming out, and the quotes that she's saying is that the players are calling them totally unprepared, and they just aren't good at their jobs. And they also criticise those in-game adjustments. Now, that'll be all fine, Reg, right? Is that players get disgruntled, and that's just the way they are. They're these sort of divas and superstars and all this type of stuff. But the criticism that they've said is what got him fired in Green Bay, which is bad for McCarthy. Now, he came out as a Pittsburgh native and goes, well, you know, you just got to man up and tell me to my face, is what he's saying. And he's calling it a teachable moment. But it is massive trouble, Reg. You know, as a professional sportsman, once you start to lose the locker room and there's grumblings,
it's
there.
It's very early, isn't it?
Very early, Reg. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit ridiculous at this stage. I mean, and as well as that, look, COVID, he hasn't been able to put in a new culture, really, because the players haven't been able to get together properly. He's had injuries all over the ball, not only with Dak Prescott. It's all over the field. And then on top of that, Reg, when the players are out there, they're fumbling the balls. They're not making tackles. They're not catching balls. You know, I mean, it comes down to the players as well, but it's very easy for them just to point the finger at Dallas. And remember, you don't change your head coach because you're a winning squad. You know, they brought him in because we're a losing team. So there was a losing culture, let's say, there, or certainly a losing record there with Jason Garrett. They bring McCarthy in to try to turn it around, and now they're criticising him because they're still losing. So, I mean, it's a bit rich, but yeah, I mean, definitely
it
all eyes on
Dallas. It's strange. I mean, and usually what you find is that sometimes it can be just one or two disgruntled players that aren't getting picked that start this type of thing, and then suddenly it rolls out of control. So he needs to get to the bottom of where these sources are coming from. I think it's wrong as well that the media are, you know, coming out and leaking this type of stuff without
100% Reg. Exactly.
Like, I mean, if you think about it, if you really want to be in the conspiracy theory corner, you could turn around and say, well, you know, any reporter with an eye on another team who wants things to go a certain way could just start leaking information and unfounded allegations. So, it needs to be ironed out pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, and the paranoia in the locker room too, because now you don't know who's talking about you, so everyone's sort of looking at each other sideways. But like you say, I mean, it could be a disgruntled coach, it could be a second, third string player. You're absolutely right. But for a reporter to come out with anonymous sources, I'm never a fan of, because as you said, it's unsubstantiated. And sure, not that now Jane Slater, she works for NFL Network, she's reputable, but at the same time, you would expect then that she doesn't release anonymous stuff. Sure, anyone can say anything, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. It's a bit red top-ish. Veteran wide receiver Dez Bryant is signing with the Ravens. He hasn't played since 2018, I believe.
Yeah, it's a weird one, really. I mean, Dez, he wasn't lighting stuff up at the end of his career with the Cowboys, so they cut him in 2018, and then he ended up signing with the Saints on a one-year deal, but he tore his Achilles, so he never ended up playing for them. And again, as you say, it was the 2017 to 2018 season. So, yeah, he hasn't played for like 2 years. And one of those years he sat out. Now, he let it be known that he hasn't retired. But that doesn't really matter. You'll find with these veteran players, if they sort of go off the boil like he did at the end of his career. Now, again, he was a fantastic wide receiver back in the day, a very vocal guy as well. But the Ravens are looking for some sort of veteran presence in their wide receiver room because they've got young guys. They're a little bit inconsistent. So apparently they're looking at Dez Bryant. They brought him in, or they're bringing him in for a workout, see how he's doing. I think they touched base with him before, a couple of months ago, to see what shape he was in. Now, he's catching passes from some top quarterbacks in the off season as well, kind of to show himself off. He's releasing videos, I think, on YouTube and all the rest, as you do. So they're going to bring him onto the practice squad. So, look, it's going to be a low-level contract. They're going to have him on the practice squad, work about, see how he's doing. And if they deem him fit for game time, well, then they probably promote him to the active roster pending injuries or his performance. It is an interesting one, though, how, you know, there's wide receivers in the league now that are still playing that are seen as, like, you know, gone off the boil. So this guy hasn't played for a couple of years. So who knows after the injury and also after the layup how he's going to fare. But it's pretty low risk if they bring him to the practice squad to see how he's doing.
Mm-hmm. One to watch, that's for sure. A bit of unrest in the Dolphins as well, you could say. Veteran quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's been benched and he's been playing great all this season. And they're bringing in the rookie Tua Tagovailoa. Yeah. Aloha, is that right?
Say that on live radio, Reg, huh?
Tagovailoa, that's it, yeah. And he's coming in as quarterback, the rookie. So he's, and Fitzpatrick's not happy. He's heartbroken. He's saying that he's been dropped off. So it's an unusual one.
Yeah, it's unusual the way he's phrasing it too, isn't it? Because, I mean, usually, you know, we don't sort of see this honesty from sports stars. Fitzpatrick, I like the guy. I mean, he's a Harvard grad, which is sort of, you know, beaten to death in the media how clever this guy is. But he is, and he likes to, you know, mess around on the podium and have fun with guys. He comes out dressed in his wide receiver's gear the odd time, you know. So he's a light guy, but that's the way he's built, in the sense that he's a perpetual veteran backup. So he's always brought in when stuff goes wrong in a franchise. He's been in the league 16 years now. Sort of characteristic. He's got this big bushy beard. Everyone knows what he looks like. They call him Fitzmagic because he's kind of a gunslinger, Reg, this guy, because, you know, he's brought in when the franchise is ailing. They've got a terrible rookie quarterback, or their quarterback gets injured or whatever reason, he's brought in, and he's able to sling the ball all over the field because, you know, it doesn't really matter what happens to the franchise at that point. It seems that they're kind of tanking anyway. But I mean, he went into places like the New York Jets, and he was breaking all these type of records that, you know, were set back in Joe Namath's time. So he is a good quarterback, but he's able to play fast and loose because they bring him in. So he was playing with the Dolphins, and they're 3-3, so they're only one game behind the Buffalo Bills, who are kind of on a slide at the minute. Now, I'm reluctant to say, because they come up against really good squads, you know, and the Tennessee Titans and the Chiefs, so it's not as if they're doing that bad. But they're ahead of the Patriots, you know, after all these years. So they're playing pretty well, and again, they come off a blowout win to the Niners, and again, they won their last game. So Tua comes on in that last game, kind of in relief because they were winning the game. And Fitzpatrick is delighted for this rookie quarterback and is sort of cheering him as he gets on. And it meant a lot to Tua as well, because after the game, a picture went viral of him sitting in an empty field with the spotlights on, in, you know, on a halfway, kind of just soaking in the moment after everybody had left. So it was important to him. But they told Fitzpatrick after the game, but the bad part was, Reg, it leaked to the media that they were kind of sacking him. So again, he's healthy, playing well, slinging the ball, you know, blowout wins. He knew he was a placeholder. So it wasn't an issue where he was like, oh, I can't believe I lost my job to this rookie. He knew it was coming, in a sense. But, I mean, they're second in the division, only one game behind. So, again, he came out and said he was heartbroken. His heart hurt all day. And then he was talking about how he was sitting in meetings with the guy who fired him and with the guy who's taken over his job. And he's finding it very hard to deal with. So, it's, you know, the typical NFL, like with the Antonio Brown situation that's going on, it's so dramatic, what I mean?
It is.
And I do feel bad for the guy, because he seems to never get a proper shot at being a franchise quarterback, even though he does put up some gaudy numbers.
Well, you just mentioned Antonio Brown there. I mean, this is a really big story. I mean, for our listeners that don't know, of course, Antonio Brown, he's serving an 8-week suspension at the moment for misconduct on his part in sending intimidating texts to one of the women who has accused him of sexual misconduct. He's got an accusation of rape against him. There's lots of stuff going on there. But he has signed with the books and back with Brady. Tom Brady has backed him. So, you know, there's a lot of seriously unhappy people in the States about this, and in particular, you know, amongst the female community, who are talking about, look, the complete lack of awareness by the NFL, and ironically, in what is Domestic Violence Awareness Month in the States, they've backed him coming back to the league and in the middle of all these allegations.
Yeah, they're 100% right too. I mean, it just goes to show what type of league it is. I mean, they send games over here and they do it, and they send some pretty substandard games over, and it's just for the money. So it's the same with this. If an NFL owner or team feels like they can get one up and an advantage on someone by getting a player in who has a questionable past, they do it. You know what I mean? That's just, and the NFL lead from the top on this. I mean, we've seen stories before leak out about Ray Rice and that domestic abuse of the incident in the lift where he uppercut his partner in the lift. And again, they didn't suspend them until the video got leaked on TMZ. So once the optics are out there and you see video evidence, well, then they go, oh, well, now we lack. So again, it comes from kind of top down. But as you say, suspended by the NFL themselves because of those allegations. But this guy, he was it was train wreck stuff. Reg, and we spoke about him over the years. I mean, he was with Pittsburgh. He threw his toys out of the pram because they named Juju Smith-Schuster as their player of the season. So then he fell out with Ben Roethlisberger, who he had a great connection with. He ends up with the Raiders, and then he was on Hard Knocks, and we saw the sort of back and forth on that, and he ends up getting cut by the Raiders because he's an absolute liability. And there was all that story about how he didn't want to change helmets. Ends up with the Patriots, and then gets cut after a game because of those sexual assault allegations and intimidating his accuser with text messages and all this type of stuff. And then all of this questionable stuff, he's releasing rap videos, there's videos coming out of him verbally assaulting his mother of his kids in front of his kids with despicable language in front of the police and all that kind of stuff. And as you say, all of a sudden, you know, his eligibility comes in because he's only suspended for eight games.
Is he that good, I mean, as a player? I mean, how come he keeps getting all these chances from these teams who are obviously going to have to accept the backlash of it and the public outcry? Why is he that good? Or
he's a game wrecker, Reggie. He is an absolute game wrecker. I mean, when he was in the league, he went to the Pro Bowl. I think he's got 7 Pro Bowl appearances. He gets separation. His work ethic athletically is unbelievable. I mean, the guy's in ridiculous shape. He puts in the work. So as a player, he's way up there. And he's, again, apart from all these sort of characteristics, he's first ballot Hall of Famer, this guy. I mean, the numbers he puts up are gaudy, and he does it consistently, which is what gets you paid in the NFL. And that's the unfortunate thing, isn't it? I mean,
that proves the point that it's all about money and it's all about results and it's all about winning, and the Bucs are willing to forego all of their principles, let's say, to bring it in. You know, I mean, I saw a report there from Nancy Armour in USA Today talking about how the Bucs are talking about having pink banners splashed across their website, 5K benefit runs for breast cancer awareness, all this type of thing. But really, Brady posting gushing tributes about his wife, his mother, his sister, all this kind of stuff. But really and truly, when it comes down to it, it's all just optics. It doesn't really matter. They'll just do anything to get the best player in to try and win Super Bowls.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, it's easier for them now because when they had Robert Kraft there and Tom Brady and there's that squeaky clean image and Bill Belichick, and then they were constantly, because what comes with this guy is a circus. So now he's going to be signed, and that's the only question they're going to have to get asked in press conferences is, how can you live with this decision of what you've done? And they're going to deflect and say, you know, I don't know what they're going to say. I don't know how you justify it. But look, it's one of those things. It's like when Wayne Rooney was pulling all his stunts. He scores a couple of goals, and then people go, oh, well, it's fine. You know, and that's what's probably going to happen here. He'll pull down a couple of touchdowns, and then people will, unfortunately, forget about all the background stuff.
Yeah, it's a strange world, there's no doubt about it. Okay, let's have a look at the ACCA for this week. Slightly bigger odds.
Yep. Cool. Yep, four-timer as well. So, again, I hope I don't have egg on my face now next week. But anyway, here we go. Seattle Seahawks to beat the Arizona Cardinals. That will be closer than expected because the Cardinals, great quarterback there. The Tampa Bay Bucs to beat the Las Vegas Raiders, because the Las Vegas Raiders' entire offensive line could have COVID and could have to sit out, but they're playing the game anyway. So when you don't have your offensive line, it's dangerous stuff. So I'm going with Tampa Bay on that one. Pittsburgh Steelers to beat the Tennessee Titans. Now, again, the odds are the same. It's a 4.5-1 odds. So if you want to flip this game around for the Titans to beat the Steelers, have at it, because it's the same odds. But I'm picking the Steelers to have the edge here. And then finally, the LA Chargers then to beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. And that's a 4.5-1 odds. Even if you flip around that Steelers-Titans game, depending on how you feel.
Okay, excellent stuff. Okay, well, plenty for us to ponder over there and think about. And as you said yourself, you're leaving your own Packers out of it this week because you don't want to be responsible for that, which is fair enough. Okay, Stephen, as always, great pleasure chatting to you. Thanks for all that wonderful insight. And we'll chat again next week.
Cheers, Reg.
Take it easy. That's Stephen O'Brien there, ukpackers.co.uk. Great podcast, huge knowledge of the NFL for all you fans out there. Well worth checking out and having a listen to. Time to turn our attention to horse racing now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Dave Weldon. Good morning, Dave.
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. I suppose good news during the week from a horse racing point of view and for all the racing fans out there that it is indeed going ahead, can allow continue one of the few sports that are, and given the amount of protocol that's in place and the lack of fact that there's nobody at the matches, I suppose, a pretty logical decision, really.
Yeah, it's good news. It's good to keep going and all that. But like racing was one of the first sports to come back in March. And even before it was shut down initially, it showed how to operate in this COVID world. And yeah, it's just everyone's kind of taking responsibility on themselves to keep the social distancing and all that and the testing and all that. So it's really good for the industry and stuff to keep going. And we've been rewarded with some great racing over the summer and into the winter. Now hopefully it'll continue.
Yeah, absolutely. And indeed, that being proven by the lack of any evidence to show that there's anything gone on around it. So well behaved by all of the horse people. Big weekend this weekend, of course, in Cheltenham. A bit of a showcase weekend. That's where you're going to go with the Lucky 15, first of all?
Yeah, we'll crack into the Lucky 15. First four races at Cheltenham. Just say yesterday was a great start to the showcase meeting. Successful clues aplenty. With Galvin win a 2-3 mile chase, novice chase there for Gordon Elliott and Robbie Power. And he'll go straight to the festival now and is looking likely to be aimed at the National Hunt Chase. He's probably about 7-8-1 for that, and we won't see him again until that race, which is no problem. He's been running all summer on good ground, so he's one to keep an eye on, and he'll be well tethered up in all the preview meetings when we get around to that time of year. And then just another one from yesterday, Rouge Viff, was a very impressive winner of a handicap chase. He was running off 1.56 and won easily by 7 lengths. So he'll have to go into calculations now for all the grade ones over the winter, the likes of the Tingle Creek and the Straw Chase that'll be at Cheltenham in 3 weeks' time. And then eventually the Queen Mother Champion Chase, he'll be high on the list for that, I'd say, for Harry Whittington. But we'll crack on with the Lucky 15 for today.
Yep.
Starting the 2:05, it's a conditions race for 4-year-olds who were juveniles last year, and All Mankind for Harry Skelton and Dan Skelton. Finished third in the Triumph last year. He's a bit of a head case, to be honest. He pulls the head out off the jockey, but a little bit older, a little bit wiser, and a 15-8, I think he should take all the beatings. He brings the best form into the race, and he's well clear on ratings, and I think with a clear round, he should win. That's number one on the card, All Mankind, a 15-8.
Okay, very good.
Number three in the second race, 2:40, a novice chaser, Paul Nichols, Southfield Stone. Plenty of experience. With COVID, the rules changed on what is a novice. So basically, they extended the time frame. So if you won a race in February, you wouldn't be a novice at this time of year. But yeah, because of COVID, they pushed everything out. So Southfield Stone brings plenty of experience. Won a race last year, finished second in a grade two. And at 7-4, number three in the card, Southfield Stone, I think should take all the world beating. Has had a little wind up, which Paul Nichols does to most of his horses, and just to help his breeding and just hopefully bring about a bit of improvement. And this is the type of horse that he really excels at.
Okay.
And in 2:40, number three sets his down 7-4. A little bit bigger price in the next two races, if they're much more competitive, but we'll give it a crack anyway. On a stick for Henry Dalian and a good young claimer, Richard Patrick, fifth at the festival last year in the Carl Cup. With the claim of Richard Patrick, runs off 2 pound lower mark in that race. It's really competitive handicap hurdle. But he's 7-1, and I think he has a great chance. Ground's no issue, and he is familiar with the course and distance. So at 7-1, I think Honest Vic's number two on the card in 3:15 has an excellent chance. And then the final one is a bit of an enigma. He blows hot and cold with the West Approach, number two in the 3:50. So a 15-2 chance for Colin Tizard and Harry Cobden. Now, his form figures wouldn't be anything inspiring. U3P4P. Kind of like a postcode.
But, weird looking at it. There's no other horse with results like that.
But he has excellent record in this race. He finished third last year. He finished third 2 years ago and second last year. And hopefully he can go one better this year, 15-2. He needs a strong pace and will likely come off from the back after jumping the last. And the ground, everything's in his favour. And I just think he's a great chance. He's on a similar march to what he was the last couple of years in this race. and this will probably be his early season target, and he'll just run these races all year, and we'll give you a run for your money. That's West Approach, number 2, is 15-2.
Excellent.
And that's the look to him.
Okay, brilliant, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty decent standard over there for Cheltenham, though, this weekend, isn't it? I mean, it's going to be high-quality racing.
Yeah, like, it's usually not the best meeting at Cheltenham. Starting off early in the season, you get a lot of odds-on shots, but given the truncated season that we've had, trainers are very well supporting this meeting. We have a couple of John McConnell horses going over from Ireland, and he does well this meeting historically, and Street to Dion is one of his that I fancy in one of the later races. He's at 4 o'clock. He should go well. But yeah, you've good horses running here, and plenty towards March, which is unfortunately what it all builds up to, but plenty of water to go underneath the bridge between now and then.
Okay, let's see what happens is right. Okay, look, there's lots of other racing going on. Doncaster, Newbury, Kelso, Chelmsford. There's even a couple of races here in Leopardstown and Galway this weekend. Anything out of all of that kind of catches your fancy that we should take note of?
Yeah, there's a couple. Now, I had a good look at it last night. In Doncaster, the last Group 1 of the UK flat season, and one ruler for Godolphin and William Buick should take all the beat. He's got a 9-2 chance. That's in the Fortuity Stakes, I think it is. The feature race there, the Group 1. Aidan O'Brien sends one over called Wembley, and usually when Aidan O'Brien sends one over to a race in the UK, he still doesn't take notice because he doesn't think it'll be beaten. But I liked the way one ruler won at Newmarket the last time, and he just progressed into a good horse. And then at Galway, the feature race there is the 2:47, the novice chase. I think Tiger Voice around 2-1 for Henry de Bronhead and Rachel Blackmore. She'll take all the beating. Then at Leopardstown, there's a couple of good races there. There's a group 3 and a listed race. Now, the Jockey Championship in Ireland is heating up really in the last week between Colin Keane and Shane Foley. There's 7 between them, and there's only 11 meetings left, so you wouldn't be surprised if he can take a lot of outside rides, outside of their usuals for Ger Lyons and Jessica Harrington. But they've been riding trebles and doubles and all sorts during the week.
Yeah.
And it's been a great battle between them. Shane Foley ride a treble, and then Colin Keane come back and ride a double, and you think it was competitive again. Colin Keane goes further clear. Okay. The one I like in the Trigo Stakes is Lobo Rojo for Jessica Harrington and Shane Foley. He's got a 12-1 chance. He won his last time out, and it's just unexposed, and I think the 12-1 looks a bit too big on a horse that's really going to like the soft ground that'll be there at Leopardstown today. Excellent. And then there's plenty on Sunday as well. The Old Roan Chase at Aintree on Sunday, Itchy Feet for Ollie Murphy, is 100-30. He was very good last year. He had a slight mishap at the festival in March, where he was unseated in the March chase, the Sam Crow one. But if he's none the worse for that, I think 100-30 should see him win the Old Roan Chase at Aintree. And then in Galway, a very exciting horse called Grand Roy, who was bought out of Nicky Emerson's and gone to Gordon Elliott for $200,000 in the sales there recently. He runs in 3 p.m. Now, the market will tell you, there's no prices available yet, but the market will tell you if the horse is on a going day or not. So I just keep an eye on him for the future, because I think he's a very exciting horse. And then at Wexford, there's one in the 2-mile-4 mares race there. Owen Kerr, alas, looks the one to beat in what looks a modest enough affair. But yeah, there's plenty to get excited about this weekend. Kind of a great time of year where the flat season and the jumps overlap, and you've plenty of racing everywhere. And sure, sports this weekend is pretty ridiculous, but you don't have to kind of think about the outside world for a day or so.
Excellent stuff. That's great, Dave. Loads to mull over there for us. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on all of those. It'll take me a while to get through them all, but we'll manage somehow or other. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Reg.
Take care. It's Dave Weldon there giving us his Lucky 15 and his thoughts for the weekend. And as he said, there's so much going on in the this weekend all across the board. He has gone with Cheltenham though for the Lucky 15, and I'll just give you those again because it's important that there's a lot of names going on there. It's important that you get it clear. So in the 205, it's All Mankind, 15-8 shot. Then in the 240, we're looking at Southfield Stone at 7-4. And then 315, Honest Vic at 7-1. And 350, West Approach. That makes up the Lucky 15 for Cheltenham. We'll get that up on our social media pages as well. Joined now on the line by our own Ken to look back at last week and Judd Trump's victory. Morning, Ken. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm doing well, yeah. There's a lot of horse racing there that I had to try and get
through. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I was listening to Dave. I mean, he tipped two winners the last time out. I backed the lucky 15, so he's in good form himself. So, and if a bit like Dan, if the horse runs as fast as like he talks or delivers them out, we'll be doing all right.
What we do about is right, yeah. How's everything going with you? All right? You're back over this week for the championship, of course.
Yeah, I've been back over, of course, and I'm on the way back today to the Championship League. So, unfortunately, I can't come in because of the quarantine laws. So, yeah, I've gone back today, and, of course, Championship League starts on Monday. I'm playing Wednesday. Looking forward to that now, I must say. I'm not looking forward to the boat ride, though, because I'm taking the car, so it's going to be a bit of a journey, you know?
Well, it's not too windy at the moment. I hope it doesn't get too bad for you out there. I know the old seasickness might be bad for you.
I know. The last time I went on a boat over there, I was lying on the floor with the rest of everybody else because it was so rough. It was terrible. It was in the middle of winter. Yeah, it was one of those crossings. But
Tell me, Judd Trump took the victory last week in the English Open.
Yeah, it was a very impressive final, wasn't it? I mean, he was 7-4 down to Neil Robertson at one stage, but came back really, really strong. Went 8-7 up. Robertson came back with a big break, 7-3 to go 8-all. And then, of course, Judd finished up with a century in the final, 9-8. I mean, the problem, no crowds, of course, you know, which is... You know, everybody has to play with no crowds today. But, I mean, if there had been crowds there, I mean, some of the shots and some of the snooker that was played in that final was just, you know, top class. Yeah, top class. And Judd Trump just extending his lead at the top of the rankings. And now he lost his world championship this year to Corin Wilson along the way. Didn't defend it. The Girl Crucible course still exists.
Yeah.
But he's miles ahead of everybody else in the rankings. And I think that's his 11th final that he's won in a row now, or it's 10 in a row, and Hendry has the record for 11 in a row. So he needs one more final and victory in a final to win, and that would be 11 in a row. It's some feat with so many great players around at the moment. Yeah.
Unbelievable, that's right. Okay, look, it starts back up again this week, the league. So Monday sees that taken off. Judd Trump is involved in that Group A. Ryan Day, Robert Milkins, Barry Hawkins, all in that group as well. You yourself, though, are not on till Wednesday.
Yeah.
You have a few Chinese players and Jordan Brown.
I've got one Chinese player, Xiao Guodong. Tepchaya Unil is one of the fastest players on the circuit, and Jordan Brown from Antrim as well. So that's out on Wednesday. Yeah, so there's like eight groups now, eight groups of four. Eight winners go into the quarterfinals. That'll be on Thursday, and then one group then on the Friday, and then the two guys play out in the final on the Friday evening. So it's quite exciting, you know, and it's keeping the boys ticking over. You play three matches, four frames at a time.
Yeah.
3 points for a win, one for a draw, on top of the league. Get you through. A bit like United, you know, when they beat Chelsea today, Reg.
Yeah, well, in fairness, they left it late last week against Newcastle. I was watching it and I was thinking, this could go very, very hairy, but they got there in the end, I suppose.
Poor old Ollie. I'd say the knives were out for Ollie, you know, but then they came back very strong. And then, of course, a great result for against PSG during the week, you know. So hopefully they'll keep ticking over. Unfortunately for Liverpool, and of course, I mean, that was a horror tackle, wasn't it, against Van Dijk as well? That may curtail Liverpool. It's amazing. It'll be amazing to see how they can cope without him, you know. But I hope he gets back as soon, because it looked like a really, really bad injury.
Bad,
you know,
I find it so hard to watch those, even on the replays. I just can't. And I've seen enough of them over the years, but I still can't get used to seeing.
You did a few of them yourself, didn't you?
I've seen a few legs snaps in my time.
You did it with your head and your shoulders.
Well, usually my arm, I actually broke my arm off a head one time, so there you go. Leeds are doing great as well. We were just talking about it earlier. I mean, third in the league.
It's great. I mean, it's great. They've got a great manager there as well, haven't they? You know, and I love the way he sits on the touchline on his hunkers almost. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's a very meticulous, articulate manager, and he's doing really well. And it's great to have Leeds back in the Premiership. There's no doubt about that. And because they've got a huge fan base, they've got a great... a great home base there at Ellen Road, and there's always something. I mean, some of the matches there over the years have been fantastic, you know, particularly United. I mean, it's such a big game, so it'd be great when the crowds do eventually come back. We don't know when that would be, 2023 maybe, you know, but
when we eventually get you back on the show.
I'll have a grey beard by then, Reg.
I know you're sitting well though in your own group, just for Wednesday to finish up on that. You're top in that group, aren't you?
Yeah, well, you know, looking forward to it, and you know, it's good to be involved, and it's good to, you know, got a 2-year card this for the next couple of years, so hopefully you get a few results, and there might be a little bit of life in the old dog yet. You never know.
There's plenty, no doubt about it. All right, well, look, good luck on Wednesday. Hope it goes well for you, and we'll catch up with you again next weekend.
Yeah, yeah, okay, no problem.
Perfect.
All right, Reg, take care. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Stay safe over there, and that's Ken Doherty, of course, who is playing in the Snooker Championship League, which resumes again on Monday, but he's back on the table on Wednesday in an interesting group for him as well. Time to turn our attention to rugby now, but our magic moment in sport is related to that, of course. It's remembering the 2026 Nations. With the championship resuming this weekend, our major moment in sport, remembering one of the greatest moments from the tournament's past, when Ireland claimed their first Grand Slam in 61 years. The Millennium Stadium, Wales, 2009. Ireland entered the game with their eyes fixed on both Triple Crown and Grand Slam glory. Similar to the Irish, Wales had their eyes on the Triple Crown. Welsh fly half Stephen Jones looked to have placed both hands on the trophy as he scored his third and fourth penalty of the game. However, Ireland's Ronan O'Gara had different ideas, and he scored a drop goal to regain the lead for the Irish with 2 minutes to spare. Unfortunately, Jones' last gasp effort, unfortunately for them, of course, fell short, and Ireland celebrated their first championship since 1985 and the Grand Slam since 1948. Here at Dublin's Talking Sport, we want to ask if you remember moments from that, so please talk to us on 087 1155 777. But in the meantime, let's have a listen to that drop goal.
Stringer, O'Gara, back in the pocket for his drop goal attempt. Here he goes, O'Gara. He's done it. That surely is the Grand Slam. Ronan O'Gara has kicked Ireland to the Grand Slam, surely, with that drop goal. Last minute of play. Wales are in kicking range. Penalty to Wales. Your nerves are bad, Philip. Think what Stephen Jones's are. He scored all of Wales's points. Is it long enough? Is it long enough? It's not. Ireland are going to win this game. They are going to win the Six Nations title. And above all, they are going to win the Grand Slam, the first in 61 years.
Well, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Will Slattery, who joins us regularly for the rugby section of this, of course. And Will, that's, you know, you're kind of getting goosebumps listening to it back there again. It was nerve-wracking stuff, but it was an amazing moment in time. But I think, you know, probably the person who was the most nervous of all of that was Paddy Wallace, when I think back on it. The one, of course, who gave away the penalty that Jones had the chance in the end. But it was an amazing time, and winning that Grand Slam in 2009.
Yeah, it's a funny one. Like, obviously, they hadn't won one in 61 years, as the clip said. And given their history in the tournament in the years prior, Freddie O'Sullivan, they had so many near misses. I know you were involved in a couple of those.
Yeah.
That it was only ever one in one way, and that was with like maximum drama. Like, even when they looked to pull clear in the second half with two tries right after the break, Wales, to be fair to them, battled back into it. But then the kind of the calmness to go in and get the drop goal, which I guess was undone, as you say, by the Paddy Wallace moment a couple of minutes later. It's not even worth thinking about, both for his sake and the country's sake. Yeah. If that had gone over, poor Paddy Wallace would have been, so it was like, you know, like a lampooned figure, but thankfully that was forgotten about. But it was just such a dramatic moment, and it just meant so much. Because it's a funny one, like, even if that kick had gone over at the end, Ireland still would have won the Six Nations, but it would have felt quite hollow ultimately after being so close to that Grand Slam, because we put a lot of stock on Grand Slams. I'm not sure how much the other countries do. They like, if they win the Six Nations, I think they're pretty happy. But for us,
in Ireland, I really feel like we put it up on a pedestal because we waited so long for it. Yeah. But to finally get it was unbelievably sweet.
Yeah, well, I think the reason why, it's because they're so rare. I mean, I remember we won the Triple Crown in 2004, and it had been the first time in 19 years we'd won the Triple Crown. And it was a huge deal. And I suppose the reason being that it was kind of the start of the change where we were kind of competing, getting odd victories here and there, but you know, not backing them up with victory after victory, and you know, if you think about it, you win that first Triple Crown in 19 years in 2004, and then there was two or three after that, and it didn't get anywhere near the same level of Ferrari. So that's why the Grand Slam was such a big deal in 2009, because it is such a difficult thing to do. I mean, you know, people might think, well, it's not that hard, you know, you only have to win five games, but you go out and you try and do that against teams like France and England and Wales when they're on their day, it's an incredibly difficult thing to do. So I think that's why we hold it in such esteem.
Oh, big time. Like, if you look, so we only won three, obviously. We won one in the 1940s, 1948. We won the second one in 2009 when it took every kind of morsel of our fibre with that old guard drop goal. And then in 2018, we won another one when we probably had our greatest year ever. So that's how difficult it is to win. The Herculean efforts it took, probably our best year of all time, one of the most dramatic moments in the history of Irish rugby, and then one in the 1940s where it was a different era. So it shows. It's funny because Wales seem to be able to just come out of the woodwork sometimes and just grab a Grand Slam. You look at, you know, 2005 under Mike Ruddock, they had a third few years prior to that under Steve Hansen where they couldn't really buy a win against any good teams. 2008, Gatland comes in after a very disappointing World Cup, wins a Grand Slam for them. They seem to be able to do it with a minimum of fuss, whereas with Ireland, we just have to claw at our fingernails, which is what made that O'Gara moment so sweet.
Absolutely, and I remember the 2005 one because we played them for the Grand Slam, so we were the last match, and by no means were Wales the favourites. I mean, they had a brilliant team, there's no question about it, but we were still fancied going into that match, just purely because of the way things had unfolded over the previous number of years. So you're right in saying that Wales do come from nowhere at times and just win it. They seem to just go on a streak of amazing performances. They're the type of team that seem to come in, and if the first match goes well, their confidence grows week on week on week, and then they can just steamroll all the oppositions. So it's funny how it works with Wales.
Yeah, especially under Warren Gatland, that seemed to be the trick. And it's funny, like, obviously Ireland have sealed two Grand Slams in the last, 10 odd years, one in Twickenham and one in Millennium Stadium. I actually preferred the one in the Millennium Stadium against Warren Gatland in Wales, such as the rivalry grown over the last few years.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, that game was really such an intriguing battle, because I think Gatland in the build-up, there had been a bit of verbals, and I know Declan Kidney, apparently, you know, one of the rare times he kind of really, like, you know, lifted the roof off the dressing room beforehand with a kind of a fiery speech. He was much more, I think, reserved ordinarily pre-match, but he was like, you know, Gatland, like, look at these comments, like, they don't respect you. So for once, I remember Luke Restrella saying, like, before the game even, the team were so pumped up, like, you know, I think Luke Restrella was practicing his kicking on the west side of the pitch, and Edwards came over and said, you know, here, get on the side, and Luke Restrella was like, go F yourself, F this, that. And then he realised that Sean Edwards was the defence coach in the line, so in a few months' time, he's like, oh, God, I think I might have submarined my selection hopes. But, yeah, it was just a fantastic day. The drama, the build-up, it wasn't just the game itself, which, you know, or he did a good documentary shortly afterwards, just the ebbs and flows of that game, the way Wales came back when it looked like after that great Tommy Bow try, you know, Driscoll squeezing over that, it was in hand, but... Yeah, it was just high drama. Wayne Barnes also ref Ireland off the pitch, if I recall.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, that's not like him. No, not at all. no, there was no doubt about it. There were wonderful times. But we're back again this weekend. Thankfully, the resumption after 36 weeks of the Six Nations. It's so weird talking about it as we're in the middle of October and waiting for Halloween. But Ireland, I've got Italy in the Aviva later on today. And it's a new look, Ireland, new coaching setup, and everything about it is interesting. And we said last week there might be some changes that need to be made, and he's certainly gone with them. I predicted Byrne in the second row, and he's done that. But you were and Peter and plenty of others were talking about changes in the back row, and they've done that too.
Yeah, no, Rory O'Connor, I think, in the Irish Independent, made a good point in the week that, like, whereas we started the Six Nations back in February, March had very much a similar feel to the World Cup. This looks more like Andy Farrell's stamp on it. Obviously, some of it has been enforced by injuries and stuff. bench instead of the likes of Furlong and Henderson. But, you know, bringing in Will Connors for his debut, bringing in Hugo Keenan for his debut, having Ed Byrne and Jameson Gibson Park on the bench for their potential debuts, there is a kind of a bit of a freshness to it. Yeah, even giving Ty Byrne another shot at second row. I know he started that West game in the Six Nations last year, which was a nightmare day all round. So I think this could be a good day for him to kind of show his kind of more dynamic ability. And even like keeping James Lowe around in the training squad is an interesting one. He's not eligible until the November fixtures, in like 2 or 3 weeks' time. But it's obviously how highly they value him, that they want him getting reps with the team so he can start in seamlessly. So there's a lot to be intrigued about. Obviously, it's Italy, Ireland are 28-point favourites. It's all about putting up a decent score, getting that bonus point, rolling it over to next week where the real test will come. But then again, you know, Ireland didn't really fire that well under Andy Farrell in the Six Nations, so they do need to get off to a good start and a positive start rugby-wise as well, with maybe a more attractive game that people would want to watch.
What do you make of this Italian side? You know, it's a real opportunity for them because it is a relatively inexperienced Irish side in some ways, and there's a lot of young players. And it's, you know, in an empty Aviva Stadium. It doesn't have that sort of intimidation factor. Have they got a side that can maybe put it up to Ireland?
I don't think so. I was reading a preview this morning, and I think Franco Smith, the Italian head coach, has made even more changes, you know, to what he... I think there's 11 new faces in the squad, even at out half. A guy who's only played 2 matches for Benetton so far, Paolo Grassi, I think his name is. That's like a huge test for him, especially out half. Italy at out half over the last couple of years hasn't really, you know, they haven't really had someone who could really direct them. You know, they've gone, you know, Tommaso Allen, Carlo Canna, guys like this who are, you know, Canna's playing 12 today, which is interesting. You know, it's a tough one with Italy in the Six Nations. They haven't won a Six Nations game since midway through the 2015 tournament. So they went a full World Cup cycle without winning a Six Nations game. Obviously, Conor O'Shea, you know, left the job without ever winning a Six Nations game, which is a fairly stark statistic.
Yeah.
You know, being a 28-point, you know, underdogs kind of says it all, really. And then they have England again next weekend, which, you know, I can't see them getting a win in either of those. And I'd honestly be quite surprised if it wasn't a very large win, 25, 30 points for Ireland.
Okay, that's interesting. I suppose it was interesting as well when you look at Leinster last night. We're a long time talking about the quality, let's say, of the Pro 12, and when you see Zebra and losing players to international duty and everything else, and then what's left, and then you put out Leinster with their young guns and just destroying them. I can see where you're coming from in terms of the national side too.
Yeah, like last night's game, and it was kind of a bee in my bonnet in general, because I've been on the last couple of weeks and I've been very positive about what I've seen in the Pro 14. I've really enjoyed some of the games, which is both strength sides. But scheduling Leinster to start the season with the Dragons, Benetton and Zebra just doesn't really do much with the league's image. As you say, last night's game, there was some interesting things from a Leinster perspective. Dan Sheehan put in a really good performance in his debut, a guy who looks like he has all the tools necessary to be involved maybe even in the Ireland squad at some stage over the course of the season. Dan Levy's comeback, obviously, but it was just such a one-way traffic, easy game that, you know, any a bit of goodwill they might have built up league-wise over the last couple of weeks might have gone. Now, to be fair, there's any way of Zebra Leinster game, it's always going to go one way, to be fair, but I feel like the scheduling-wise, I would have benefited more the league if Leinster had a decent game in the first couple of weeks when the full-strength sides were out. Just to kind of put it up and show that Leinster won't have it all the wrong way the whole time.
Would have been, definitely. I mean, you could say that about Munster. They've had real tough opposition and challenges. And they've met those challenges, you know. So, you know, they certainly haven't had an easy start to it. But I hear what you're saying. Leinster's pathway has been a lot easier. Listen, just to finish up, and hopefully that's not a bad ironic pun, but finishing up, the drastic budget cuts, Philip Brown coming out yesterday talking about how badly they're affected, 36 million of a deficit, and I know there's been a bit of balancing of books to account for a 15 month season and everything else, but it's really, really problematic at the moment, and they've got to get people back into these stadiums soon. Philip Brown saying that he's really worried about the future of professional rugby in this country.
Oh, yeah, extremely stark numbers coming out of the IRFU yesterday. And I think Tom Grace, the honorary treasurer who's departing after this is his last year, kind of made the point that they can basically cover this year But then after this year, in terms of player wages and salaries, they will need assistance if the crowds don't return to some semblance of normality. And interestingly, or worryingly, I guess, as well, the IRFU have kind of shelved contract negotiation talks with a number of key players whose contracts are due up in the summer: Johnny Sexton, Tyke Furlong, Peter O'Mahony. And then what do we do if we get to, say, 6 months' time and there's no full crowds back on the horizon? Because realistically, if they do some sort of thing where you can have 200, 500, that really won't, you know, cover much, to be honest. Like, that's it'd be nice for fans to get in, but it won't, in terms of the bottom line, it won't really do anything. So unless there's going to be a robust full crowd or even a half crowd, if the financial picture is very bleak, they will need some sort of assistance, or else you could have a situation where these players can't play in Ireland anymore. Or some of them, are they going to have to make cuts? Will they have to have reduced squads? Will some of the big earners be forced to go away? Which would really put a test to the rule of not picking players outside of Ireland. I go, although the one caveat to that is that it's a worldwide issue. It's not just an Ireland issue. So while maybe there's a couple of sugar daddies in France, you know, who could foot the bill still, you know, English clubs are in a similar boat. Like, they'll go to the wall too if crowds don't return. So it's a really worrying place for the game. And to be honest, it's hard to see when the crowd issue is resolved in the medium term. Like, will it be at any stage this season? I'd be questionable whether it would be. So yeah. I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah, no, and there isn't going to be a lot of sympathy out there either, because let's face it, there are a few figures. I mean, I think they had a 28 million profit last year or something like that.
Yeah.
The figures are, you know, quite positive, and a lot of people would be saying, oh, they have plenty of money, they can well support themselves. But that'll only last so long when you are paying these wage bills. And I think, you know, players are in for... I read Ronan O'Gara's piece during the week, and I found it very interesting what he was saying about, it's not like it was years ago where there was the threat of France and England, where players can just up and go over there and use that as a threat, because those clubs are not in the position that they were, and there isn't, in his opinion, going to be too many French clubs knocking on the door of Ireland to cherry pick the top players, because the players might find themselves outside that door. It's like Zeebo would be an exception to it, maybe, and Johnny Sexton in his day was an exception to it, but I don't know if there would be as many knocking on the door as we might think.
No, look, there's probably only a handful of clubs in world rugby who financially, by dint of who owns them, wouldn't be massively affected to the point where they won't be able to, like, shell out lavish salaries. I'm just thinking of maybe Poe and the top 14 who are owned by, like, an oil conglomerate like Total, which obviously bottomless pockets, or, I don't know, you know, your Clermonts, or and even like Toulon have scaled back massively on their recruitment. Like, I was just looking at their team sheet, they played Cass last night. There's one or two big names, but for the most part, the days of the Galacticos are well and gone.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, you'd imagine they'd be going to the likes of New Zealand and Australia and, even England to cherry pick the best players from there. Though it's not that they'll be, first choice would be to go to Ireland to pick them up.
Well, it depends on the player, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's just a very uncertain time. I think Philip Brown, to be honest, put it in very simple terms and very digestible terms for everyone to understand. Basically, they have 1 year's worth of reserves that they could kind of pay the full wage for the players. And then after that, the really interesting thing is with the contract negotiations, they're like, our players going to have to accept now that it's a completely changed market. It's not going to be rebounding in the near future. Mm. Like, will they have to be taking big salary cuts? Because I know that was a bone of contention. They held firm. They didn't want to take a 20% cut over the summer. It went on for a couple of weeks. I think there's going to be another big negotiation coming in the near future.
Absolutely.
And it's very difficult to see what way to go.
Yeah, it's hard to see the counter-argument. If the product's not there, if the business isn't there, and if the money's not coming in, it's very hard to argue against it. Okay, well, it's interesting times, Will. There's no question about it. We'll have to watch it very carefully in terms of what's happening. But in the meantime, today we're saying is probably going to be a bit of a walk in the park for Ireland. Next week against France, that'll be a bit of a different story. I'd imagine you'd have different opinion on that, but we'll talk to you next week about that one.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking. Actually, it's set to be a cracking final Saturday. Well, you know, one semblance of normality, we'll easily get a Six Nations Super Saturday to finish off the campaign. Yeah. But I expect a straightforward and kind of handsome win today, and then all to play for next Saturday.
Excellent stuff. Well, Will, as always, great chatting to you. Thanks for all that insight, and we'll catch up again very shortly.
Cheers. Cheers, Reggie.
Take care. That's Will Slattery there, of course, of The Independent, giving us his views on this weekend's rugby and Ireland taking on Italy in the Aviva Stadium at 2:30, I think, is kick-off today. And we both feel that it's probably going to be a pretty easy day at the office for Ireland today. But it will be very interesting to watch the new players and the new faces and see how they're getting on. Delighted to be joined on the line now by our own Declan Drake. Morning, Declan. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Reg. How are you?
I'm not so bad at all now. I mean, it's great. There's plenty going on this weekend and there was plenty going on last weekend. I want to talk first to you about the Dublin Meath game of last weekend. Before I come to you, you caught up with Desi Farrell last week. Let's have a little listen to what he had to say.
Well, Desi, your first competitive game in over 6 months. Your impressions of what was a good contest against Meath there tonight?
Yeah, it was, for sure. We knew it was going to be that. They were very, very competitive, and it was great to get a game like that because we didn't really have a benchmark that gives it to us now, because up to this point, we'd only more or less played a couple of internal games. And so it was good to get the first run out. You know, some of the fundamentals are still to be worked on, but that's what tonight was about, and sharpening us up and get us ready for other games that lie ahead.
In your own perspective, just how difficult has it been over the last few months, even the last couple of weeks? I mean, not knowing whether we were going to see inter-county football again in 2020.
Yeah, sure. Obviously, that uncertainty was out there for sure. But I tell you, it's a lot better position to be in than where we were at the start of the lockdown when we thought everything was gone for the year. So, look, as you just get on with it and make do and embrace what comes your way. And we're just delighted to be back now at this stage.
Big night for Dean Rock tonight as well, surpassing Jimmy Keaveney as our all-time scorer as well. And a fine goal to mark the occasion.
Yeah, big night for Dean. He played very well. Obviously, his run with Ballymun Kickhams in the championship has served him well, and he looks sharp. It's going to be a fairly hectic schedule for sure, but you know, talking to players, there's something quite appealing about that. You know, there isn't the long breaks between games, and there's always the next game to look forward to, and to rectify things or do things better or whatever, and that's what these players feed off, you know. So we're not overly concerned about the volume of work or the schedule that's coming at us. In some ways, it's to be enjoyed.
Yeah, lots of ways to be enjoyed. Although I would say it was probably a little bit closer than most people expected it to be, Declan, just the 4 points in it at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, credit to me, they came across the county boundary with a well-organised game plan, and they executed it fairly well for long periods of the game. Reg, it's a completely different Meath, I think, they had played in their previous five games pre-COVID lockdown, where they'd lost them all and been relegated to Division 2 for next year. But this was an opportunity, you know, to get back on the bike for them once again. It's close to championship as well, and the break has obviously done them good, and they've been well organised down there. And yeah, they can look forward to positive days ahead. They came to Parnell Park and scored 19 points on the night, you know. First league game, by the way, in Parnell Park, football league game in Parnell Park for 10.5 years, would you believe? So very, very few of any of that Dublin team, Stephen Cluxton not being an obvious exception, being there now, record appearance holder for Dublin would have played perhaps in that game, but very, very few others would. But look, just great to get back in the bike, as Desi said there. Yeah, there's a lot of things to be ironed out. Scored 120 on the night. Great night, as he said there, for Dean Rock as well, becoming our all-time top scorer in league and championship, surpassing the great Jimmy Keaveney. Tremendous achievement to Dean. Congratulations to him on that. He's 30 years of age, hopefully many more years to come, and he can extend his lead significantly over the years, starting, I suppose, with a trip to Galway tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely. Pierce Stadium tomorrow to take on Galway. Now, again, it wouldn't be considered... I don't know, Galway just seem to be in a bit of a mess against Mayo, so they have a lot of work to do to try and put up an opposition against Dublin tomorrow. But I suppose the Dubs will have to fear a bit of a bounce back from Galway and be wary of that.
Yeah, and Dublin could be going potentially to Galway tomorrow, Reg, to win the league. You know, right. If Kerry don't beat Donegal this afternoon or this evening, well, then Dublin have the opportunity to win the league tomorrow. Mm. We've spoken before about, you know, pre-COVID and post-COVID, the effect it can have on teams. Mm. Galway were absolutely flying pre-COVID, the lockdown in March, you know, and they were serious contenders for the league and looking good for potentially for the a good run in the championship as well. Came back last week against Mayo and were just blown off the park in their own patch. You know, really, really poor performance from them. And as you say, rightly, you can expect a backlash from them tomorrow in Shum. So Dublin beware going down there tomorrow. But it's an excellent opportunity, again, to step our preparations up for the championship starting in a couple of weeks' time.
You did mention there Kerry, of course, who are red-hot favourites to lift the title with the win in Donegal. But do you see any chance of an upset there?
Well, anything is possible, isn't it? You know, anything is possible.
But realistically? You
know, in this day and age, realistically, no. I would expect that Kerry will take the opportunity to be crowned league champions today, and good luck to them.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that, but I'm sure the Dubs will only have one thing in mind, and that's going down and putting in a big performance against Galway. And as Desi said, benchmarking themselves and sharpening up, getting rid of any rustiness as obviously the business end comes down the track. Okay.
And great. Just before we go on that, just to say it was great to see two players in particular get starts last week. One was Robbie McDade of Ballyboden St Enda's, and the other one was Keane Murphy of Thomas Davis in the cornerback position, players being rewarded for good runs in the club championship. So the best of luck to them as they try to nail places down in the championship squad.
Best of luck indeed. Okay, the hurling championship is later on, so that's at 6 o'clock. Dublin taking on Laois. I suppose plenty of challenges for the new bosses and everything else, but looking to try and lay down a marker.
Yeah, so different, isn't it? You know, no short sleeves, no ice cream, no shades. Instead, you've got winter woolies and cold nights in Croke Park. But like everything else, we're just delighted, I suppose, to have the opportunity to have championship hurling this evening against Laois. And no doubt about it, Reg, a score to be settled after last year's huge, crushing disappointment against the Omagh County men down in O'More Park in Port Laois. Just a brief lead into it, we had done very well in the Leinster Championship last year. We had had a fantastic victory over Galway in Parnell Park, who were the All-Ireland champions only a couple of years before that. The great sense of expectancy after the Galway win that we would beat Laois and qualify for a quarter-final against Tipperary. But as we well know, on the day, they had other ideas and scuppered that particular plan. So it was a long winter and long lead into this particular game for Matty and the boys tonight. We've played them twice since, of course, in the league and the Walsh Cup. We've won both games, so hopefully tonight we can win again. We badly need it. But again, the form has been good from a lot of the lads in the club championship. The management team will have been impressed with some good performances from them, and hopefully they can carry that back into the intercounty scene tonight.
Absolutely. And what about the Laois team? As you said, they don't lie down easy down there, expecting that they're in the running for another upset.
It's possible. Yeah. Well, you know, we've no form coming into this, obviously. Yeah. So it really is a lottery on the night. Whoever takes the opportunity best. It'll be a very strange experience playing in an empty Croke Park this evening for both sets of players, you know. So it's just really on the day, whoever is the sharper team, whoever is the finest tuned team will take the opportunity. What a big prize the winners have, Reg, a clash against Kilkenny back at headquarters next Saturday.
Going to keep a firm eye on that one and see how it goes. Now, also during the week, there's been lots of kind of ups and downs. It's been a very, very difficult week and underage level with games. Are they on? Are they off? What's happening? But the hurlers, they went out anyway and they beat Antrim 2:22-1:08. That's a very convincing win.
Yeah, well done to Paul O'Brien and the boys there in that particular victory. It wasn't easy preparing for that game, I'm sure, but they went up to Louth during the week, as you say, and had that comfortable enough victory, particularly in the second half against Antrim, to move into the next round against Offaly, which, of course, we don't know, unfortunately, when that's going to be. My own suspicion is that it'll probably be the early part of next year at this particular stage. But look, all they could do was go out, put in the performance, get the result, and they did. So congratulations to them on that particular victory.
Okay, excellent stuff. Anything else you want to finish off on?
Yeah, I just have to say I really feel sorry for the under-20 footballers. They had their All-Ireland semi-final last Saturday against Tyrone up in Cavan. Very difficult game for them, but thankfully Tom Gray's charges came through that particular game with a couple of points to spare over Tyrone. They were looking forward to the final this evening against Galway down in Port Laois. And then, of course, the level 5 restrictions were imposed from midnight on Wednesday. So that scuppered that particular plan. So it's been a long, exhausting year in many respects for these players, winning the Leinster title, waiting 6 or 7 months to play their All-Ireland semi-final, and now they don't know when the final will be played. So, but look, I suppose the important thing from last weekend was they qualified for the final anyway, so well done to them on that particular achievement.
Okay, excellent stuff. Okay, Declan, as always, thanks for all of that input, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Please, God. Take care, Reg.
Take care. All the best. That's Declan Drake there, giving us all of our GA reports. Thinks that the Rubs are in for a little bit of a challenge down in Galway, but probably should overcome that, and indeed the Hurlers too this evening at 6 o'clock will probably get victory there, but we will watch and we will wait. Time to turn our attention to football now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Morning, Al. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. I'm good. Thanks yourself.
Oh, very well. Thanks very well indeed. Enjoyed the week watching the bits and pieces that were going on, but it was disappointing, really, in the end. Dundalk, they gave us great hope. It looked like things were going to go swimmingly, and then I think in the second half they were just outclassed a little bit.
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it, really, Reggie, is that they were outclassed in the second half, because in the first half, they gave a really good account of themselves, played really, really well, scored a great goal, as good a goal as you'll see anywhere, a really well-worked team goal, great ball into the box from Mountney and Sean Murray, who's having a brilliant run in the European games. I think that's his third game to score in now, with a brilliant header. And as you said, at half-time, everything looked as if it was going according to plan, but Molde, to be fair to them, up the ante in the second half, and they were pinned in right from the start of the second half. They found it difficult to get out on Dundalk. A lot of people were suggesting that they dropped deep, but it was just more a case of Molde just were putting so much pressure on them, Reggie, that they just couldn't get out of their 18-yard box. And when the goal did arrive on the hour mark, it had been coming prior to that because there was a few skirmishes in the box. And then, to be fair to Molde, they went on and got the winner as well. Probably a soft penalty Sean Gannon gave away, yeah. But it was a penalty. And they rallied again at the end towards kind of injury time. There was a lot of injury time added on, and Dundalk gave it a right good goal, put Molde under a little bit of pressure. But to be fair, it was the right result, and they were outclassed in the second half. And that's the level of opposition that they're up against now, Reggie. And it's only going to get tougher as well with the games to come, with obviously Rapid Vienna, but Arsenal, of course, next week also.
Yeah, Arsenal next week. I mean, I'm really looking forward to that game, just, you know, to see how it goes and see where they can match themselves, let's say. But when you look at Arsenal coming back away from home against Vienna and winning 2-1, it kind of makes it even more daunting for Dundalk.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, and it's going to be a brilliant occasion for them. Obviously, it's during the week. I think they're travelling out on Tuesday or Wednesday, but I'm sure they're all looking forward to it. And they'll be delighted. There was a lot of positives to take from the performance the other night. Ultimately, the result is the disappointing one, but they did play very well in the first half. Probably the best I've seen them play, Reggie, because I was a little bit worried about them going into the group stages, because I still think their form is very indifferent, and it's nowhere near the level of what we saw when they were going into the group stages under Stephen Kenny in 2016. So they performed really well in the first half, but you would worry a little bit maybe going into the tougher games, as you say. Like, Arsenal only brought Aubameyang on in the second half, and that's the level of quality that they have, that they can leave him on the bench. And then when they were losing, to bring him on, Bellerin, I think, came on as well, and both of them combined for the goal. The winning goal. So it's going to be tough for them, but it's going to be really, really enjoyable as well, I'm sure. And they're all looking forward to pitting their wits against some of the best players in Europe.
Absolutely, no question about it. Okay, let's turn our attention now to last night, and unfortunately, from an Irish point of view, it wasn't to be for Ireland against the Ukraine. The women's team were, you know, very optimistic going into it. I think there were chances. Katie McCabe, unfortunate, hitting the crossbar, obviously with the penalty. But in the end, like, it's just more heartbreak again, and they're going to need others to do them a favour if they're going to qualify now.
Yeah, and it's total heartbreak, Reggie, especially with the way the game panned out, because they were the better team. They played really, really well. When you look back at the goal that they gave away as well, I'm sure the girls will have sleepless nights for a long time, the goalkeeper involved, and obviously Anya as well. And it was just one of those things. It was a howler that can happen, but of all the nights for it to happen, been probably the biggest game for women's football in a lot, I'd say ever, and with the chance that they had of obviously qualifying for their first major tournament, it was so disappointing. And then they showed such a brilliant reaction from that to come back and threw everything at Ukraine. But as you say, the chance that arose then with Katie hitting the bar as well, they'll be absolutely devastated. But there is a little bit of hope, but it's very slim now, Reggie, the chance that maybe they can qualify.
Yeah, I saw the coach, Vera Poe, being interviewed last night, and she was heartbroken. You could see it, like, it was just the realization of. And but to be fair, she said that they didn't feel that they left anything out there. That absolutely every effort was given.
Yeah, and that's sometimes you can obviously you can get some solace in that, the fact that you've given everything and it just wasn't meant to be. And I think that was the case of it last night. It certainly just wasn't meant to be, because of all the nights to have a mistake like they had as well, you just feel like the world is turning against you. And then obviously Katie, who's been so reliable in the campaign, and she's such a brilliant player and having a great season with Arsenal as well herself, you would fancy Katie all day long from the penalty spot. And for her to hit the bar was just so disappointing for them, because they've done so much work, good work in this group. The only thing, the only blight on their copybook in this group really, Reggie, was, and it could come back to haunt them, not only the game last night, but to concede a late equaliser against Greece. And we covered the game, and they were dominant in the game. Now, it was a tough game, but to concede a sloppy equaliser, I think it might have been the 93rd, 94th minute.
Yeah.
And even that alone, they dropped 2 points on that night, and that's come back to haunt them a little bit as well, because now they're relying on others to obviously do them a favour.
Yeah, heartbreaking stuff. Well, let's hope somehow there can be a way out of it found, but it will be dependent on others. Okay, let's move it to the League of Ireland now. And Derry kind of made life a little bit easier, assuring themselves a little bit of safety, probably 2-0 winners over Shelburne.
Yeah, it was a comfortable enough win. They dominated from start to finish. I watched Shelburne last weekend and did a good win against Sligo, and that was the first time they went back-to-back, Reggie. So, to be fair to Shelburne, they just kept themselves in the division, and I said at the start of the year, that's all they needed to do, was establish themselves in the Premier Division after getting promoted. Derry, on the other hand, have been disappointing this season. They qualified for Europe last year, but this season has been very, very disappointing. So I'm sure Declan Devine is just happy to see the back of this season. That was their last home game now, and as you said, it will be safe, but that's about the best they can do this year. So he'll probably be just thinking, get the season out of the way, and hopefully it's a lot better for them next year.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Just get it over with.
Get
out the gate.
That's not even talking about everything that's gone on this year. That's just Derry's form alone. If you add in everything else on top of that, Reggie, he's probably like, just get the end of this year over as soon as possible.
Absolutely. Okay. Rovers still sitting pretty at the top, obviously. And they are at home to Derry on Wednesday night. But later on today, Cork, who are at the other end, obviously, they're away to Sligo, and Sligo themselves, you know, they'd like to get another win under their belt. They're safe and everything else, but they, you know, it hasn't been too bad a season for them. So another daunting one for Cork.
Yeah, Cork. It's all eyes on Cork tonight, Reggie, because, like, even though the season has been very, very poor, and they deserve to be where they are on based on the results, I think it would be a travesty if Cork City get relegated, because they're such a huge club. Like, it was only last year and the year before and the last three or four seasons that they were going toe-to-toe with Dundalk, and they were their nearest rivals, and everybody talking about just how good Dundalk were, but Cork were pushing them every year and they were every bit as good. So to think that they have an opportunity now and the chance that they might be relegated, like, it really will be a travesty. But to have a chance against Sligo Rovers tonight, I watched Sligo against Shelburne and they were very, very unimpressive. They've had a poor enough season themselves. Sligo Rovers are down at 7th in the table. They'll be hoping to finish on a high at home, but it's been a disappointing season overall. But all eyes will be on Cork, because if they're going to stay up, they have to win tonight, Reggie. Simple as that.
Absolutely. Okay, let's turn our attention across the water then. Great game last night. Seeing Leeds getting 3-0 against Villa. We spoke about Leeds at the beginning of the season and I felt that they were going to go well, and some people also felt that way. But they've far exceeded expectation.
Oh, they've been phenomenal. Yeah, it's like the football last night is like Phoenix from the flames, Reggie. Villa and Leeds top of the table and fighting out a win like that. But Villa have been amazing all season. They've had a great start, but Leeds as well. And I was really, like you, I was really looking forward to Leeds coming back into the Premier League, and not just because they're a huge club and the big following that they have over here and so many people are interested, but purely because of the manager and the football that they play. And a lot of the players there would be unheralded and you wouldn't really know, they wouldn't be household names, but they're a fantastic team, and that's all down to the manager and the structure he has in place and the way they play and the way they attack every game, Reggie. It doesn't matter who they're playing against or where they're playing, home or away, he sets up a plan for them to go out and give everything they can and take the game to the opposition. And that's exactly what they did last night as well. And Bamford, who struggled in the Championship, he used to, like, I think the stats prove last year that Leeds used to create the more chances out of everybody, but their scoring ratio was one of the worst compared to everybody for the amount of chances that they created. And Bamford was probably the most guilty of that, because he used to get himself into great positions but never finished them off. But this year he's had an unbelievable start to the Premier League. I think that's his fourth or fifth Premier League goal. He's had a brilliant start, and yeah, it's great to see Leeds back where they are. Villa will be fine as well. Villa have signed well, obviously, with Barkley. I think he's added a lot to them. Cash at rifle. Villa will be fine. But it's just good to see big, huge clubs like them back where they belong, really, Reggie.
Absolutely outstanding. Yeah, no, it really is. And when you look at the top of the table and you see Everton, Villa, Leeds and Liverpool in fourth, Leicester City in fifth, you really would not have been able to predict any of that. I'm looking at Manchester City in 11th, Chelsea in 9th, and Man United down, way, way down in 15th. You know, those names are, and Spurs even in 8th. I mean, those names all jumped off the sheet to us all at the beginning of the season when we were trying to work out which way this league would go. And it's brilliant. I just love it. I love the fact that the Premier League has been turned on its head. I don't know if it's COVID or what it is. No crowds in the ground or whatever. But it just makes it a really exciting season because already there's, like you're saying, well, there's probably 5 or 6 teams that could probably be competing at the end.
Yeah, I'm the same as you, Reggie. Like, money has overtaken the game and the greed that's involved now. And you see the stories breaking last week about looking for a breakaway to the European League with the big clubs and all. And that's not the way football is supposed to be, in my view. That's not the way we viewed it when we were growing up.
Yeah.
And to see those other clubs, as you say, at the top of the league now, and all the other ones that are spending the money down, leave them down at the bottom for another while. That wouldn't bother me in the slightest,
yeah,
Reggie,
yeah,
at all, because it really is. Like, football is at a major crossroads now of where it's at, and I knew this was coming because of the money that's been thrown at it with TV and all sorts. And I fear for football in terms of if this breakaway league goes ahead, and it keeps rearing its ugly head all the time.
Yeah.
So there has to be some sort of discussion going on, and these huge owners coming in and only wanting to spend their own money and control the game, I don't think that's good for football at all.
Yeah, no, it's lost its ethos. Just on that as well, I see Ozil's agents, they're starting a bit of a war with Arteta and trying to find out, tell the truth, why is he really not in these squads?
Well, another thing with Ozil, Reggie, that I found bonkers, I was watching the match, obviously Dundalk on Thursday night, and Ozil, as we know, is having a dispute with Arsenal at the moment, and we all know the wages and the money that's on, but he was on Twitter constantly for the Arsenal match, literally he was like some sort of social media PR man for the club.
Yeah.
And just tweeting out things non-stop about the team and how great they are and the players and all. And I'm thinking, he's become a 300 grand super fan. Like, it's absolutely unbelievable that the money he's on. And there he is on Twitter non-stop. Again, it shows you about the bonkers of 2020 maybe, and that's another part of it. But it's sad to see a player of that quality
that is
in some sort of a dispute now, and the money that he's getting as well, and he's not even involved.
I
don't know what the resolution is or how to come to some sort of agreement, but I don't know where the end is in that. Like, in the old days you could get away with that, you could let a player rot in the reserves because he wouldn't have been on that kind of money.
Yeah.
But with the money that they're on now, how can you be paying out 300 grand a week to a player that he's not even involved in the squad?
It's crazy. I suppose the juiciest encounter this weekend is going to be later on this evening at 5:30, Man United taking on Chelsea. United, you know, they were brutal for the first 60-70 minutes against Newcastle. I was watching the game, and then out of nowhere they pulled 2 goals and sort of looked a bit like themselves again, and Chelsea have been disappointing. How are we seeing this one go?
Yeah, I'm the same, Reg. I was watching the match against Newcastle, and the word were dreadful, and Newcastle are horrendous, one of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, they pull it out of the fire with the goals. But I'm thinking, if they go to PSG and they lose, Solskjaer is on his last legs here.
Yeah.
But then they pull out a brilliant result against PSG. Now, PSG were poor as well, but still you have to give United credit. It was a great result. And he seems to be just hanging on. I don't know how he's hanging on. Yeah, and just when you think, God, that's the end for him now, when they'll bring in a proper manager, he's still pulling out of the fire. So I don't know, Reggie. It'll be a tough game. I still think Chelsea are going to have a really good season if they can sort out their defensive issues. But I've been saying that for a long time about them now, and Lampard needs to get a hold of that, because last week, again, they conceded 3 against Southampton. And if you're going to be competing at the top table, you just can't be conceding 3 goals against Southampton. So
Definitely. If
they sort out the defence, they've enough attacking power to go and beat United.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Alan, as always, great chatting to you. We'll catch up again with you next week.
Thanks a million, Reggie.
That's great. Alan Cawley there of Cawley's Call podcast, giving us his thoughts on the football. And that's all we've got time for on this week's show. Again, it's gone very quickly. Thank you for listening to us on Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, the producers on today's show were Paul Morris and Blaine O'Hara. We'll be back again next Saturday. I want you to take care, stay safe, and have a great week. And come on, Ireland!